Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This week marks the anniversary of the final of a trio of soccer friendlies between Ireland and Nazi Germany. While the results have perhaps become something of a historical footnote, the abiding imagery of swastika banners flying over Dublin and straight arm salutes by Irish fans cement this as a dark chapter in Irish football history. And to tell us more, off the ball's Cameron Hill. Good morning, Cameron.
Good morning, Pat. How
are
you?
So three games, when was the first?
May 8th, 1935. So this is a game at a time of really, really important time for both sides in the history of football. So Ireland was still playing as the Irish Free State. It was the Football Association of the Irish Free State, or Fifes, at the time. It was a year later before they became the Football Association of Ireland that we all know and love and played under the banner Republic of Ireland. Meanwhile, Germany have started to establish themselves as a footballing powerhouse, a status that they kind of keep to this day. And it's the result of this guy, Otto Nerz, who was the coach at the time, Dr. Otto Nerz, a relatively early member of the Nazi Party, it has to be said. He was a pioneer for German football, studied the work of the great Austrian philosophers of the game. So the likes of Willy Meisel was a huge influence on him. And he built the team, Der Mannschaft, into a formidable footballing force.
Now, how did they do internationally?
Pretty well. So a year before this friendly, they reached the semi-finals of the 34 World Cup in Italy, which the hosts won. They lost to Czechoslovakia in that semi-final and then were tasked with delivering gold at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. Germany suffered a shock quarterfinal defeat to Norway and Nerz was sacked by as manager by the Nazi government.
Okay, but Nerz was in charge in that first game in Dortmund.
Yes, and Germany won that game 3-1 in Dortmund. Ireland's manager that day was 22-year-old Alex Stevenson, which is an amazingly young person to be charged with a huge, huge game for this Irish team. And a number of the Irish players, the likes of Plev Ellis, Joey Donnelly, Paddy Moore, Jim Foley and goals, would be back with a vengeance the following year. Just on Nerz, he was then imprisoned during the Battle of Britain, transferred over to the Soviets, who notoriously treated German prisoners very well, and he died in 1949 in a prison camp.
In a prison camp, all for because he didn't deliver the Olympics. I mean, is that the logical outcome of his failure in Berlin in 36?
Yeah, it seems that way. Probably his links to the Nazi Party didn't help his case, I wouldn't think, with the Soviets. But interestingly, his assistant coach, Sepp Herberger, steps up to the plate and he's in charge for the next game in 1936 between Ireland and Germany.
And he held on there for quite some time, through the war and beyond the war.
Yeah, he's one of the few players who stay on after the war, and he coaches West Germany to win the World Cup in 1954, the first in their history.
When you think it's so few years after the war had ended, after the hostilities ended.
It's a nice microcosm of how people who might have been associated with the wrong side of history.
So, anyway, the Germans come to Dublin.
Yes, they arrive for friendly in late 1936. They're still chasing from that failure at the Olympics that summer, and they just lost to Scotland in Ibrox a few days prior. So Friday, 16th of October, they arrive off the plane, greeted by Taoiseach Eamon de Valera and Lord Mayor of Dublin, Alfie Byrne. They faced an Ireland team dotted with players from the game in Dortmund. Tom Davis was handed his international debut that day, and Leeds United player Charlie Turner was captaining the side. By all accounts, they were treated incredibly well. There was a banquet after the game in the Gresham where they were staying. Oscar Traynor attended this, the future president of the FAI. And the German team, adorned with swastikas, arrives in Phibsborough. And after the warm-ups, the team assemble for probably the most notorious image from that day. If anyone's heard of this game, they will have seen this image.
What is the image?
So the Irish Times match report has it as this. The German team lined up in the centre of the field and faced the popular stand. They gave the Nazi salute and turning to the grandstand, in which the officials of the German Association and 400 Germans who'd come by the specially chartered liner stood rigidly to attention with right arms outstretched, while the army band under the leadership of Colonel Fritz Brasse played the Nazi anthem, which was sung by the Germans on the stand. So
So the Germans all stood up to the national and gave the Nazi salute?
Yeah, for the entirety of it.
Did any of the Irish do the same?
We're not 100% sure. We'll get to that after the game, because the game itself is quite interesting. Mm-hmm. So Joey Donnelly opens the scoring after 25 minutes. Stanislas Kobierski equalises for the Germans a minute later. Fritz Schepan puts the Germans in front before Tom Davis, the debutant, scores a penalty to make it 2-2 at the break. And then Matty Gagan nudges the hosts in front again, with Donnelly and Davis each grabbing a second for an emphatic win. It was described as a great performance with greater verve, dash and persistency than any Irish selection had produced. But caught up in the frenzy of such an unlikely and historic win, Irish fans then invaded the pitch at full time and, according to the Irish Times, took up position in front of the grandstand where the German officials and visiting party were seated and lustily cheered the visitors, hundreds of arms being raised to the Nazi salute.
You wonder, though, was this kind of ironic, you know? You can stuff your whatever.
Yeah,
I can see the way a football crowd would react. You know, we've won the day, so...
Here you go.
Here you go, doing it
quite ironically. I find it interesting. It's such a big win. Like, this is the one that announces Ireland on the stage. And this is a time where there's a phony war between the Northern Ireland IFA and the FAI. They're taking players from each other, calling each other's players up. That stops in 1950. So this is the first really big win for Ireland. At the same time, Daly Mount is now the home of Bohemians, the most prominent left-wing club in the League of Ireland. So for Nazi salutes to be performed by both sets of fans on the day is an ironic twist, I think.
Now, moving on to the third game in May 1939, so the war is only months away, the declaration of war in September of 1939, and probably more known about the Nazi regime then than was at the earlier fixtures.
Yeah, at this time they're slowly being ostracised by the Western world for the annexation of Austria and the Sudetenland, prominent and at the forefront of everyone's minds. Ireland, meanwhile, had agreed to a friendly with the German team in Bremen. A Bohemian sporting life was a great source for this, and they say that reports of the brutality of Hitler's regime were met with suspicion by the Irish government. Apparently this is due to Charles Bewley, who was the Irish envoy to Berlin, who wasn't the best source, it has to be said, in terms of giving the full view of the facts to the Irish government. The German side had world-class players like Paul Janis, one of the most prolific goal scorers in their history, Ernst Lehner, and Helmut Schön, who would coach Germany to the 74 World Cup. So lots of different people from later German history. While Ireland had Manchester United's Johnny Carey and Jimmy Dunn of Shamrock Rovers captained the side that day.
How did it work out?
So Jimmy Dunn is a really interesting character in all of this. He was a Republican and an ardent socialist interred during the Irish Civil War. He still holds the record for consecutive goals in the English top five flight with 12 consecutive games, 18 goals. For context, Jamie Vardy got as close to him with 11 consecutive games a couple of years ago. So they go to the game in Bremen, and German officials instruct the Irish players to respect the local custom and give the Nazi salute during the German anthem. Mm-hmm. England had done so in Berlin the year before. Apparently this was done under protest, so the Irish players were expected to follow suit, except for Dunn. The story goes that as the anthem played, he and his teammates raised his arms. Dunn stood firm. It's debated what he said at this point. He did say, "Remember 1916," and one account has him saying, "Remember Ochrim." But he stood in defiance while his teammates gave the salute. It would be a great image if we had photographic evidence of it.
Of that, we don't know. So the result...
So disaster would strike when Jimmy Dunn, on the 34th minute, was injured in a collision with defenders Hans Rode and had to be carried off the pitch. Remember, substitutes weren't big at this time. You only came off if you were injured. And I always think the term friendly is not the best term to describe international exhibition games, as this will show. And then Helmut Schön scores the opening goal. So it looks like disaster, but Captain Fantastic Dunn comes back onto the pitch, and Paddy Bradshaw's header equalises for Ireland in front of 35,000 German supporters at the Weser Stadium. It finishes 1-1. The three-game series finishes 1-1. I think Ireland win on aggregate if I have the match right.
And then the Second World War.
4 months later. So there you go.
Cameron, very interesting stuff. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.